Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Kyle Devitt, and we are coming at you with 2013 action as the season is now underway. Kyle, we had three games this weekend, as well as a host of, as you termed it, in your midweek. Well, I guess it was a midweek look back, recap, whatever. NLLing, which means that we have players playing in the NLL. We also have a handful of players that are coaching college teams or whatever, so certainly there was a lot of roster fluctuation going on. Doesn't mean that we can't take away some things from this weekend, so we're going to dive into the games as we currently have Denver 1-0 with a 21-16 win over Charlotte, Chesapeake 1-0 with a 17-14 win over Rochester, and the New York Lizards 1-0 with a 14-11 win over Boston. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the first game. Let's start with Charlotte-Denver.
Okay. Well, let's start with Charlotte-Denver as you kind of framed the way that you looked at this a little bit, and I think kind of interestingly and unexpectedly so, around the winner of the Jeremy Boltz P. Poyon trade, which was one of the bigger moves of the offseason. As you look at kind of the factors that dictated the outcome of this one, what do you think were the most significant for the Outlaws win?
Between those two players, you know, I went over to my column. I think it probably comes off a little harsh on Poyon because Poyon's going to get his goals. That's not a question. He's definitely going to score buckets and buckets for Charlotte, and they need him to because their attack, you know, is Matt Danowski. Ryan Young had an okay game, but it really, you know, Danowski is everything to that team, and he's actually not playing on Sunday, which we learned on the conference call today. So that could be an issue moving forward.
And on Denver's side, what did you think they had going for them? You know, particularly, and obviously when you give up 16 goals, you're not going to say you leaned on your defense. It was an offensive effort that I think the Outlaws put out, particularly in the absence of Jordan McBride and Brendan Mundorf, that many people will look at and say, wow, I'm surprised they were able to get that many goals. But I'm also interested in the Outlaws' defense because when they've been at their best over the course of the last couple seasons, you know, they've had guys like Eric Martin who, you know, played after not playing down the stretch pretty much for all of last season. And, you know, they give Jesse Schwartzman a chance to be one of the best goalies in the world. What was your take on what they were able to do defensively to, relatively speaking, limit the Hounds?
I don't think they did much, and I think they actually, as a unit, didn't play very well. Individually, you mentioned Emart. I think he had a bad game, if I'm honest. I mean, I asked Stagnito about it on the call today. He's just like, well,
I don't know how you can say that when he had a slash within the first 10 minutes of his first game back.
Right. Well, he didn't get the Gordy Howe hat trick, so I guess that's a bad game for him. But, it, you know, Danowski is, you know, my theories on Danowski are well documented. I think that if Danowski gets the ball in transition, it should be a goal almost every time. That's just how he plays. But, you know, he played 6-on-6 really well, and he beat Martin like a drum. You know, it was kind of tough to watch at points because you're like, you have Lee Zink. What are you doing? Move Lee Zink on Matt Danowski. End of game. Game ends. It's over. You know, but it they just didn't do it. They did it really late. Stegnia said they tried to do it a bunch of times, and then Charlotte went and pulled a coaching move and ran Danowski out of the box. And who's he get matched up out of the box? Eric Martin. Who's he score on? Eric Martin. I mean, it was kind of chancy, and he had a full run at him, but it didn't look good, you know. So we're going to have to see what happens, see how that defense develops. I think, obviously, Lee Zink played really well. You'll notice that Eric Lusby was basically might as well not have even been playing. He had a pretty bad game, but I think once Charlotte gets Sawyer in there, Sawyer would have ripped a ton of goals. Cause Lusby's just timid with the ball. I think, I don't know if he's coming off an injury or he just didn't push anything. And he's not a on ball guy. He's an off ball guy, but even still, an off ball guy playing with Matt Danowski should have goals, period. You know, Ryan Young will run right by you and score. And he did, you know, once. But it just, the offense just looked kind of strange with how they set up overall.
Anything else on this one? And I guess just kind of generally speaking, did this result or this outcome surprise you?
No, not at all. I mean, Charlotte scoring 16 goals is kind of surprising, but, you know, Denver scoring 21, not really. Denver's good. I think they, you know, Sievert continues to develop and be a very strong player. And Denver gets junk goals all the time. You know, even Drew Snyder had a couple good bids that didn't really go in for him. Chris Bock, that was amazing. 6 goals, basically all of them, you know, cutting off ball, going backdoor in his defender and just finishing in tight. I mean, that's just how he plays. And it's really fun to watch. I mean, he's a fun player to watch for sure.
Right on. All right, so up next, the Chesapeake Bay Hawks, 17-14 winners over the Rochester Rattlers down in Florida. You had some choice words about the venue. Don't think we need to go into that one. We'll leave that to your column more than anything else.
I'm in enough trouble as it is, man. Let's just go through it.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, to a degree, it seemed to me the storylines, obviously, Chesapeake's poor shooting probably prevented it from being a little bit more of a blowout than it ultimately was. And then, you know, I don't necessarily know how much to take away from the early season results out of the Rattlers, because not only, you know, do they have a few pieces that need to come back for various reasons, but also just I think that when, you know, you're starting an attack of Lavelle and Millen, you know, Ned Crotty being one of those guys who will obviously work his way into the mix as well, right? Like, these are three guys that haven't played a lot of lacrosse recently, so it's as much about finding your way. And I thought that a 3-goal loss to defending champions is something that you can build on. Is that a fair assessment in your point of view?
Not really, just because.
Because you're a pessimist and I'm an optimist?
Sure, you can say that. But also, like, Chesapeake destroyed them. This game should have been a lot. I mean, I pointed out the shot differential in my column. That's ridiculous that they didn't beat them by 10. I mean, you know, I had the spread if I did spreads, which I don't because gambling is illegal in New Hampshire. But if I did, I could probably make a decent amount of money just shorting it. And I had it at like 10 for this game. That should have been a blowout. It wasn't. You know, Rochester's goalies came in. You know, this Joe Bano guy is enormous, takes up the entire goal. He at one point, Grant Kalikow had a crease dive and slammed into his stomach, and they upended into each other, and the goal got disallowed because he hit him. Which, how could you not, diving at a guy that takes up the entire net? I mean, it was entertaining, but, you know, like you said, I don't want to focus on the venue, but that, like, when they're like, oh, we're going to play in Florida. I'm like, oh, cool. They're going to play somewhere really nice, like FAU, like the All-Star game last year. Not so much. Not so much. I think there was like a Little League game in the background. You know, it's like, come on, like try a little harder. And it wasn't even just that. It was just the production had a mic right next to the bench and coaches were like screaming into the mic. The whole broadcast, it was like, at one point it drowned out the commentators, which is too bad because, B. Reese made his debut, had some fun stuff to say about Chesapeake, started calling their plays before they happened. And then like when he was wrong about it, he's like, oh yeah, well, you know, they usually do that. It was pretty funny. I enjoyed it. Just cause I love Reeser, but I just think that Chesapeake should have won by more. They didn't finish well. I was impressed with McCready's. I think he's a solid player. I think he's actually going to get a lot of time with them, even though they have Rubior, Westy, and John Grant eventually coming to play. And I mean, you know, they still own Casey Powell. You know, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Casey Powell came in for 3 games at the end of the year and just was like out of nowhere, and they just won a championship with him. And he actually really retired, like, for real this time. So I thought it was really cool to watch the younger guys get some time. That was the one thing I took away from it. And it was definitely a stark contrast to Rochester, where the old guys were getting time. And at one point Rochester just stopped attacking through its attack, which when you do that, you can't expect to win games unless your midfield is completely dominant. And I didn't think Rochester's was completely dominant, but Rotan surprised me.
Well, hold on. Let me grill you on this a little bit, because I have some questions I want to ask about this. First of all, did Thomas Wood play midfield or attack?
He ran out of the box, and then he played some midfield. Then he played some attack. Like, he stayed low, but for the most part, he was a midi.
Okay, so him, Groot, Strebel, and Rotans, who you already mentioned, account for 12 points. Now, I just, you know, edited Quinn's piece for the June issue of the magazine, and he addressed his concern about the Rattlers as being, you know, their issues at the midfield. That's a really impressive midfield performance, and when you, you know, add some of the pieces that they're going to add, is that not that big of a concern, particularly if, you know, if Rotans becomes what I think, you know, talking to Coach Garber after the draft, you know, he saw Rotans potentially becoming in Ohio last summer.
Yeah, I don't know. It really depends. It didn't look like they were even running an offense. That's really what kind of upset me watching them. It was really rather disorganized. And disorganization is par for the course at this point in the season. But they really need to get it together. There was a lot of one-on-one from the top, out of transition, ripping a shot that went 50 feet wide, and no one backing it up. I mean, that's not basic lacrosse. That's not good lacrosse. Like, this is the NLL. You need to have someone behind the cage. And a lot of the time, it was Millen, and Millen, every time he touched the ball, had a whack on his arm from Polanco every single time. I mean, I don't want to harp on the Millen thing too much. And I don't want to be like, oh, I was right. He was going to be awful. Because he wasn't awful. You know, he wasn't awful. But, you know, like you told me, oh, I can't wait till Millen scores 5 goals and then chirps you on Twitter. But I don't think that's going to happen. He might get 1 or 2 every game, 1, 2 goals, but I don't know. Even the goal he scored was like a bouncing deflection that went in from the wing. And honestly, when he scored it, Fiorito got pulled, like, immediately. So, you know, that's there's something to be said for that. There's something there.
I mean, okay, I don't really know what is to be said for that, but I also think that, again, you know, what somebody is going to become is over the course of the season, generally speaking, is exacerbated when they haven't played, you know, the previous however long. And so Mike LaValle putting up 1 goal. I mean, Mike LaValle is one of my favorite players in the world. I thought that, you know, without Ned Crotty and Mike LaValle, the U.S. does not beat Team Canada for the gold medal in 2010 World Games.
Yeah, the fall down goal. That thing was awesome. I remember that.
So what do you say about that? You know what I mean? Like, Millen outscored Mike LaValle, and I don't think that anybody's going to dispute that Mike LaValle has the potential to get back to that level.
Well, I think out of all those guys, Mike LaValle's the guy with, you know, that has the most tools, I would say, to help him succeed and get more playing time once he gets his legs. I think Kevin LaValle didn't look great. Although he wasn't dodging like he was last year, if he got a couple of shots off or saved, he would just take the ball and like run to the wing and go on his guy. And that's not his game. But to his credit, he played within himself and, it wasn't that bad. It just against Chesapeake makes people look bad though. Like, it's hard to say what they're going to be. I think next week, we'll prove, you know, where they are. I think next week, again, when they play Charlotte, a team like Charlotte on Sunday, and Charlotte doesn't have Danowski because Danowski's going to be with Duke, that's going to be a big determining factor. I think it could be a tale of two teams.
Mike Kimmel, 0 goals, 0 assists. Steven Brooks, 0 goals, 2 assists. You concerned at all there?
No, because Brooks is streaky. He has games where he can't, you know, hit water falling out of the boat, and then he has games where he's just a sniper. And he didn't take a lot of his mid-range looks, which is his strength. He needs to get within the two-point line, and he settled a little bit. But I think, you know, that's bad news for the Lizards this weekend, because he's going to go – I feel like he's probably ready to go off. And actually, Spallina said it on the call. He was like, yeah, that's not good when Steven Brooks has a bad game, because the next game he's not going to have a bad game. And I kind of support that mindset.
And then on the flip side, I mean, you could argue that part of the reason – you know, those guys only took 4 shots. Meanwhile, Ben Hunt, 4 goals, 2 assists. Kyle Dixon, 3 two-pointers and an assist. They combined to take 23 shots.
Right.
They had a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dixon has the green light from, you know, midfield. So, I mean, Carl even said so himself when I was talking to him last week.
Name
drop. As far as Ben Hunt, Ben Hunt's kind of like, you know, they have a similar game. And if they play two man, you know, it's hard to slide out to him because they'll just wait and wait and wait and just play and play and play. And all of a sudden a shot is like out of nowhere. But I feel like they did a good job working together.
Well, now let's move on to the final game of the weekend, that being Sunday, the New York Lizards making their debut as the New York Lizards with a 14-11 win over Boston. You know, this was an issue of a combination of Boston's inability to win faceoffs and mental mistakes, right?
I mean, yeah, it was not a well-coached game from the perspective of if you're getting killed on the faceoffs, like try something different. I know it's the MLL and you have to have guys go in there and battle, and you have a faceoff guy, you dress a faceoff guy, he has to take faceoffs. But if it's not working, and it wasn't working at any point, I mean, his seven wins weren't even him winning the ball. It was someone from the wing, like throwing it like two or three checks on a Unterstein and then taking the ball somehow, you know? I think, you know, for Boston, I think Brent Adams actually played really well. I think he played really well on the wing, playing D-mitty, getting his big body in there and making plays, but it wasn't enough. I mean, they need more guys like that. And they have, like, you know, they got Cam Flint coming. I think, you know, when we ask, you know, when we talk to Rabel later, I kind of want to get his thoughts on the rookie crop and how they're going to progress the team. Cause I think that they're going to inject a new blood into Boston. And frankly, Boston needs it. I think Poske took seven shots and none went in. When was the last time that happened? Like sixth grade? Like honestly, when was the last time that happened to him?
I don't know the answer to that. If you are honestly asking me.
No, I mean, you know, it was probably sixth grade. Let's go with sixth grade. We'll ask him. Awesome this weekend. But, you know, it's Drew Adams. You know, people forget, like Long Island, oh, all these trades, all this offense, oh, Rob Pinnell. They still have Drew Adams, who is amazing to watch as a goalie. And I'm not like the biggest goalie fan, but he's crazy to watch. He's great, acrobatic, great to watch. So I think that was the difference. And also, you know, guys like the Unterstein brothers and Waldeck really showed up and really played as hard as they possibly could. Did you watch the YouTube video of Jim Brown's speech to them before the game?
I have not yet. I heard about it, though.
It's great. You should watch it. It's great. I really enjoyed it. It was excellent. It was everything you could hope for and more.
All right. Well, I will check it out. I saw it. I talked to folks about it. Talked a lot about Jim Brown as he made an appearance at the Big City Classic as well. But I'm transmitting an issue of the magazine this week. Haven't gotten an opportunity to spend a lot of time on YouTube yet. But let's move our attention a little bit more to the Lizards. I mean, you just kind of talked about them a little bit. But the fact of the matter is that when it comes to these acquisitions, a couple of the bigger ones, namely David Earl and Mark Matthews, are both playing indoor. So, you know, they're NLLing. Haven't seen them yet. Meanwhile, Matt Gibson, the returning rookie of the year, is also NLLing. So this new look team that people are talking about, you know, with the exception of Jack Greed and Steven Berger, didn't really see it that much. All of that being said, what were your thoughts on the new look Lizards?
Well, I think you can pull a couple guys out of there and figure out where the new guys are going. You know, I don't think Langtree played very well. I know he didn't. I watched the game. Catalino played pretty poorly. It's, you know, everyone was worried about who's going to play where. They need to find time for Palasek, because Palasek, you know, put that team on his back at one point and, you know, dropped a ton of points. And I think the concern watching the Lizards versus Boston is the Lizards have a plan, and the plan is, you know, go at the other team as hard physically as you possibly can, wear them down, and then break their spirit. Whereas Boston is just moving the ball up the field and like flinging the ball around, and not sometimes there was just no urgency. And it's hard to watch that after, you know, I grew up watching the Cannons and I've seen that before, and that's not a good sign. That needs to change. In 2011, that changed and they won the championship. And they've been a solid team since, but if they encounter a team that can really punch them in the mouth, they always have problems and they just need to get tougher on the field. They just need to get tougher. They need to get guys, you know, like I said, like Cam Flint in there and just body up and lay a guy out. That needs to happen. That's what that team needs. So moving forward, New York looks to be in the driver's seat. I mean, they're playing Chesapeake this weekend. I'm so upset I'm not down there to watch that game because my alternative is going to Boston and watching them play Hamilton. And I don't even know who's playing attack for Hamilton because they don't even know. So I'm jealous of people that can go see that game at Navy Marine Corps. And if you can and you're in the area, you should go see it because that's going to be a great, great contest.
Particularly since there's such a glut of local – no, glut. Does that mean a lot or a little? That means a lot.
A lot.
I mean, yeah. A dearth. I meant a dearth of local lacrosse in the Mid-Atlantic area. Might plan on checking that one out myself. But Kyle, you mentioned that we're going to be talking to Paul Rabel, so why don't we go ahead and do that right now. And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Boston Cannon midfielder Paul Rabel, who, as far as I know, is one of the few guys that was able to take in and play in both an NLL and an MLL game this weekend as his Philadelphia Wings season came to an end on Saturday, quickly turned into his Sunday game against the Long Island Lizards. And Paul, I want to talk to you about how interesting and difficult that transition is. But first, I guess just can you kind of run through how you felt like the game went for the Cannons?
Yeah. So we'll go over how it went. You know, it was obviously disappointing. You know, we wanted to start off the season with a win. You know, you look at last season, the race for the playoffs and how tight it got and really how important the early games are and getting the wins in that column. Just, you just never know the way things are going to unfold. So I think generally we lacked a bit of sense of urgency and it's, again, it's a combination of things. A lot of guys, are missing from the NLL. You know, training camp is sort of altered in that way. And then, you know, again, the length of a 14 game season, you know, I just got a general sense that we're not really where we should be yet. But you know, that leads a lot of promise and opportunity for this weekend's practice.
Hey, Paul, it's Kyle. I just, you know, watching the game, what I could watch, because it was kind of like watching through lens flare most of the time. You have a lot of not changes to your core, but kind of changes in, you know, the defense. And I mean, at one point there was a three long pole on entire other team fast break. And, you know, the only reason it didn't go through is because, you know, one of the poles went offsides. Those poles going upfield, do you think that kind of leaves you vulnerable on the counterattack at all?
Well, I think the first thing you address is how many offsides we had. I counted at least four. And that is like, you know, we talked about in the locker room, that puts us in a situation where, you know, Greg Grenlian played as well as he did. And then we're giving away another four possessions there and losing opportunity. You know, it's something that we need to, you know, work on in practice. Additionally, you need to be just smarter lacrosse players. You know, opening yourself up to a counterattack is something that, you know, I think we scout from team to team. Long Island's a team that likes to get out, but, you know, looking at that specifically, we got to be careful against teams like Denver and then this week with Hamilton, where their poles really like to get up and out.
Paul, you kind of addressed, you know, two of the more interesting storylines, I think, that, you know, we're coming into this season in that answer, but I was hoping you could speak a little bit more about them. The first is that, you know, the Cannons, who have been a model of consistency, both in terms of its approach and its success, with the exception of, you know, kind of transitioning from Billy Day 2 years ago, whereas, you know, the Lizards have made tons of changes and in a lot of people's eyes, you know, made significant improvements in the offseason. I guess, can you just kind of give your thoughts on, you know, like I said, you kind of addressed where you thought your team was at, but more so just what your impressions were of the Lizards, given the fact that, you know, that they are so different and they will probably continue to look different over the course of the next month or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lizards and Coach Spallina did a good job in the offseason of acquiring talent and, You know, everyone knows, you know, what type of player Rob Pinnell is, who's coming out of the draft for them. And, you know, they'll be a dangerous team. You know, I think, I believe it was Corey McLaughlin from U.S. Lacrosse made a comment on Inside the MLL that, you know, you think a lot of spectators look at the season in three parts, and that's, you know, the first probably four games when the teams are just transitioning with the core of their NLL players, those that have them, you know, towards the then the second part, the collegiate players coming in, the third part, hopefully, you know, the culmination of what you planned on your team being headed into the playoffs. So, you know, the biggest difference, like you said, is being consistent throughout. And if you are, you'll be able to pile up enough wins to even be able to make the tournament, which is only four teams.
I don't really follow the NLL much. I don't mean to deride it as much as probably people think. I think it's a great league. Just kind of not my bag. I focus on MLL, but.
Well, you're an MLL fan and you're looking at it as the way in which it affects the MLL product. I don't think that's something you have to apologize for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an MLL columnist.
Okay. Well, continue. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's fine. How did the season go for you guys? And, you know, you're on the wings. There was a ton of American players on that team. How did you guys come together? Those are guys you compete against in the outdoor league, in the MLL. And how was the transition from that, given you had, like, what, not even 12 hours to do it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was disappointing, you know, way to end the NLL season with the Wings. You know, it was a really a very special group of guys because we were comprised of, you know, a lot of the American MLL talent I think we have across the board. Between, you know, myself, Mundorf, Westervelt, Siebold, who was on the team that didn't play, Meg Crotty, and you can say Brody Merrill, who's a prominent player in the MLL, Kyle Hartzell, I mean, CJ Consiglio, we have tons of guys, right? So it created a great environment in the locker room. The most difficult thing I've ever done in lacrosse, quite honestly, was making that jump in less than 20 hours. From team to team, and not to say that I haven't, or other guys from the NLL, from or NLLing, the way you posed it in your article, Kyle, but, you know, the guys that do it, you know, we finish the season, then you have, you know, the Monday through Thursday to prepare, then you practice with your team, you go, you have your team meals and stuff, and you get as accustomed to the chemistry that's been built as you possibly can heading into that, and that's always been very difficult with the week in between. Physically, you know, playing in a doubleheader, we do it in the NLL often, so it wasn't the physical aspect of it that was difficult. It was going from an NLL team that you spent, you know, 4.5-5 months with battling, and then losing a close playoff game, you know, sort of having to say your goodbyes for the season, and those are always abrupt. And then, you know, having to really turn it around for a 6 a.m. flight and then join a team that you know, I consider myself one of the strong leaders of, and entering a roster now you know, has a third of the players from other teams that we've acquired through, you know, the off season, which is normal, and then being sort of looked at in huddles to fire the guys up. It was taxing. You know, I think it was sort of unprecedented territory. I didn't really know what to expect, but I wouldn't have done it any other way. You know, I love the Cannons. I love the organization. I love the MLL. And quite honestly, I've been just chomping at the bit to get back into it. And, whatever scenario was sort of there, I was going to just attack.
Well, it's interesting because one thing that I think most lacrosse fans would have expected your answer to include was addressing the idea of the difference in terms of just the actual game, like on the field or in the box, whatever. And I think all of your points are well taken insofar as like making an adjustment in terms of, you know, kind of the emotionality of being a part of a team is the most difficult I mean, I would imagine, you know, having been a part of teams not in this way at all, but been a part of teams in the past that have had their seasons end, you know, it's a bummer. And then to turn around and all of a sudden here you are, you know, starting another season, I would imagine it, you know, made it a little bit more bittersweet than it might have otherwise been, just simply bitter. But I also want to know, like, to what degree is the change in terms of the actual game being very different a part of what you were going through, or a part of what you accomplished, or a part of what you did between Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. But it's something that I think we've probably talked about before, Terry, be it on a podcast or in the magazine, just the sort of the preparation. But at this point, you know, I'm a 5-year veteran, and I've learned from what I did, or I'm trying to learn, not saying I've learned, but I'm continually trying to learn what I've done in the past. And I think years 1 and 2 in the pro leagues, making that transition felt like it was impossible because my game is so different outdoors than it is indoor versus some of the other guys that play attack, for instance, that are always inside 10. The consistency there, I think, makes the transition a little bit more seamless where, you know, the shots I take in field, I don't come near taking it indoor because it's just not viable in the setting. But what I've done over the past, you know, I guess years 3 through now is, you know, really break up my weeks into training as the MLL comes. You know, you're always staying fit and doing your strength conditioning work. But, you know, I really, you know, try and carve out 2 separate times a day to shoot with my indoor stick and then go out and try and take shots with my outdoor stick. You know, I think the more you do that, the more you can, you know, mentally adjust, you know, the easier it'll be. And I think I did a pretty good job this off season, or this NLL season, keeping my outdoor stick in my hand to a certain extent to where it's not going to feel completely strange.
Not to look forward too much, but you have a nice crop of rookies coming in to bolster your lineup, and you got Buchanan coming back eventually as well, giving your attack a little different look. How do you think that's going to impact how you guys play for the rest of the season?
Well, yeah, we're definitely looking forward to it. I mean, it's going to be great to have Buchanan and Heim back this week. You know, the most important thing is just figuring out what works in practice and getting on the same page with plays and sets and man up. You know, I thought our power play wasn't anywhere near where we want it to be, and that's a big part of the game. You know, I think faceoffs made a bit of a difference, and then a lot of our turnovers and offsides and mental mistakes. So, you know, it turned out, I think a lot of the loss we had this weekend against Long Island had less to do with our personnel, and more to do with our our own failures and decision making. So, you know, it's always going to be great and have and present more opportunity to have some of these guys come back to the squad and hopefully they'll help us, you know, physically and mentally.
Well, Paul, as always, we want to thank you for joining us in the podcast. I actually think this is the first time you've appeared on this particular podcast, so we want to thank you in a special way for your time there. And certainly, you know, as you continue to, I guess, both build and mesh with this relatively new look, but for MLL standards, also relatively consistent Boston Cannons roster, all the best of luck, and certainly, again, thanks for your time, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, Kyle, that was number 99, as he, I'm sure, is setting out on a campaign to reclaim the MLL MVP award this year. 4-point performance against the Long Island Lizards in a Cannons loss. Anything he's saying there that you want to rehash, or you want to move on to the next topic of conversation?
No, man, Rabel's Rabel. That's how we do, you know?
Let it roll. So, yeah, let's jump in. And you know, one of the things that you kind of talked about, opened up your post with, was just this concept of NLLing. And certainly it's not to say – it's not just that. I mean, you know, the rookies don't arrive until about a third of the way into the season. And you know, there are a couple of guys who are assistant coaches of college teams that weren't able to take part. I guess just – There is a devil's advocate argument to be made that this type of roster fluctuation is interesting That would be one point, you know, one prong of an argument for why this, you know, these turnovers are good in the early season. Another one would be it gives otherwise underexposed guys opportunities to get noticed, and some of them stick. I mean, Jeremy Sieverts is you know, the notable example from last year. You know, Michael Simon, the long stick for Chesapeake, you know, might be another example of somebody who's able to do that, as he's picked up some good recognition as well. But ultimately, you know, there are very few people that think that this is a good thing. Just generally speaking, you know, you're right in saying that you don't want to talk about too much about it, but, you know, it's topical for right now. What are your general opinions about how big of a deal this is for the league and, you know, what they sacrifice, what they get out of it, that sort of thing?
Well, you make the only points to be made for it, I feel, which is guys get a chance. And that's important in this league, that guys get a chance to live out, you know, maybe it's not their dream. Maybe they didn't grow up dreaming to play for a pro team or play pro lacrosse. But, it, you know, at some point it probably was. And the fact, you know, a lot of these guys coming from other, you know, not ACC teams, high-level programs and D1, there's other guys that can play lacrosse out there. And I feel like they should get looks. That being said, I think the networks for certain teams are good enough now, and the knowledge base is much better than it used to be, that they'll find those guys anyway. That's kind of, I mean, I don't mean to totally push away your point at all, but it's just anything that damages the product is bad for the product. Like, how, I don't understand how they can't see that. It's very stubborn. It's frankly pigheaded. And it needs to change soon, because it's great that everyone's talking about it. Yeah, sure. Like, all we want is people to talk about blah, blah. It's wrong. It's wrong to do this to the players. It's wrong. It's more importantly wrong to do it to the fans who show up and want to see the star players. And they're like, you know, Denver fans are like, well, where's Brendan Mundorf? I don't see. I mean, Brendan Mundorf's the best attackman in the world. Why don't I get to see him? You know, Charlotte fans should feel that way. Well, why don't I get to see Brendan Mundorf this past weekend? What happened? What's he doing? Oh, he's playing in that other thing that I don't even know anything about. That's lame. Give me my money back. You know, that's, I mean, maybe not, obviously not everyone feels that way, but there's a certain sect of people that do, and I feel like they're justified. There needs to be, and I've actually given up on hope of there being a compromise. It's not going to happen. Not with this leadership group that's there on both sides. I don't know the NLL as well as the MLL, but I know who will move and who's going to lose a staring contest, and it's not Dave Gross. And that's resulted in good things for the league and bad things for the league. And I think it's a bad thing that they're not considering even moving the schedule back 1 week. I think that's
one, you know, week would be enough, or are you just saying that, like, you know, hypothetically?
I don't think they're going to move it to May. I don't think they're going to move it to after Memorial Day. It's not going to happen. I mean, they used to play 2 weeks into May, and that was, you know, all right, because those two games. But there's, like, we're going into, like, almost five games where you're not even going to see a rookie, you know, depending on where his team is in the playoffs. And a ton of these guys, especially in this class, are in a lot of those teams, are on a lot of those teams and in important games, and have had long, long, long seasons. So why are you lessening their chance of playing by not starting after they're ready? You know, and I don't want it to be like it used to be, where, like, a rookie played one season. Like, I call it the Steve Dussault syndrome, where, like, he plays, like, one season and he's never to be seen again. And everyone's like, where'd that guy go that scored, like, 20 goals? Oh, yeah, no, he's, like, outselling medical equipment. Like, that's, you know, I don't like that. I want the fans to experience a player, grow up with a player, like, have a favorite player and follow it. You know, I feel like they deserve that. I feel like the players deserve that. And it's not happening, and I don't like it. And I know I'm not the only one. So something has to change. It has to be from the top. And I don't really know when that's going to happen.
Well, that's enough about that. Let's move into some more general topics. You've seen 6 of the 8 teams in the league play. So, obviously, you don't have full evidence. But after 1 week, if you had to guess what your answer to this question will be in, like, mid-July, who's the most fun team to watch? Who is, you know, like, other leagues call it league pass viewing. You know, you hear that about the NBA. Oh, sure. I got to watch the Golden State Warriors. I got to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder. Who's the ESPN 3 team for you this season in the MLL?
As far as like good lacrosse, I feel like Denver is probably the most fun to watch on offense and defense. Cause you know, when Jesse Schwartzman gets scored on, he throws a tirade and I like it. And I think it's really funny. But also, you know, they play hard and they play smart, which some of these teams do not, which, you know, Rabel kind of touched on it a little bit that Boston needs to improve its intelligence in the game. I would say, you know, it depends on Danowski, but Charlotte's fun to watch. Sure. That's a fun team to watch. Obviously Chesapeake is a great team, has great shooters. Kyle Dixon is like a revelation in shooting. He should be giving shooting lessons to every lacrosse player in the nation. You know, people should watch him and study his release and study how he moves and stuff like that. I think he's transcendent in his ability to score from distance, and his release and his power. You know, I think those teams, I think that, you know, New York, once they get their guys, will be more fun to watch because you know that Rob Pinnell is going to provide highlights. You know that Mark Matthews is going to provide highlights and they're not even there yet. And neither is Max Seabold, who is also going to dodge through. At some point, Max Seabold is going to dodge through an entire team this year and score. And that's great to watch. I love watching stuff like that. Those are the teams I would look at. I think they're
so half the league.
Watch. Yeah. I mean, almost that's like three teams. I think that's fun to watch. New York remains to be seen, but I feel like they're going to be there. That's more prognosticating than actual evidence. But you know, as evidence, I think it's Denver and Chesapeake are great to watch and really solid.
Well, you also threw Charlotte in there, so that's, you know, that's four.
Yeah, depending on Danowski.
Right.
Because it's Cavi.
Anything from the conference call this week that we should know about, aside from Matt Danowski not being able to play on Sunday?
Yeah, he's not going to play. Crotty's going to be back. Joel White's going to be back. Galloway's going to be back for Rochester. So that team's going to look very different. Hopefully play very different, for their sake. That's pretty much it. There wasn't a lot of, the coaches hate roster questions. It's really funny. Huntley is just like, oh, I can't believe I can like feel his face just like cringe and get like angry every time someone's like, well, you know, your entire team plays indoor, so who's going to play attack? And he's like, we have guys that we think can step up. End of answer. You know, it's frustrating to get them to talk about it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, guys are more honest. Stegnita doesn't care and will tell you whatever you want. Coddle will hide a couple guys, like the Matt Casey thing he hid from me, and I was in his office. You know, he's not even on the board, on the whiteboard of a guy they would pick up. They didn't even talk about him. So, and he played a lot. You know, I mean, a lot for a D-mid, but Jeff Reynolds will be back for them. Westervelt will be back for them. So Chesapeake's going to look a little different, even scarier, if that's possible. Hopefully they'll finish their opportunities. But for the most part, you know, we're still chugging along. We're still trying to figure out who's playing attack for Ohio, who's playing attack for the Nationals. That Ohio-Denver game is going to be really interesting. We'll see what Ohio can do because I don't think they're going to be a basement team. You know, I ranked them above Rochester and Hamilton in the power rankings last week, and I feel vindicated in my rankings.
Good for you. Well, I'm glad you feel vindicated. My little call out for a player that I think is going to have a big weekend this weekend is Kevin Crowley. Don't know why. I'm just feeling it.
Yeah?
I mean, probably because nobody else on his team is going to be able to score goals.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. They were talking about Brody bringing the ball up and scoring goals on the call. So not a good sign. But we'll see. I'll be at that game.
Well, Kyle Devitt, that'll do it for week one MLL podcast in the books. What do you think if you were going to grade our performance on this podcast today? On a scale, power rankings. We need to get like the MLL GMs to power rank our podcasts.
Yeah, I'm sure they have time for that. I'm sure they have time for that. They probably don't even want to see my name anywhere near anything after the column this week, but whatever. It's all good. Haters gonna hate. It's cool. Shout out to my mom who got surgery. She's recovering. Love you, Mom. Love the podcast.
Personal shout outs definitely up the score for the podcast. So we appreciate that.
Well, I'm going to do a personal shout out at the end of every podcast, I decided. That's going to be my shtick this year. Personal shout out. So be nice to me. You'll get a shout out. Boom.
I can't wait until like week 12 when you're out of friends and family and it's just like, shout out to at K112 who said he wanted a shout out this week on the podcast.
Yeah. Twitter is the best way because all my friends are on Twitter, all like 8 of them. You know, it probably won't be week 12. It'll be like week 6. But whatever. It's all good. It's a lonely life at the top of the mountain, man.
All right. Well, let's put our listeners out of their misery and end this thing.
Sounds good. See ya.
Inside the Cross Podcast.